everyone, and welcome to this week's episode of Don't Go Broke Trying. I'm your host, Rennie, and this is our Coinfessions episode. On our Coinfessions episodes, in case you don't know, these are episodes where we basically answer questions that you have submitted and questions that I find on Reddit. So today we're going to be talking about housing and rent and a few questions about that. If you ever want to submit a question to us, just email us at dgbt@rennietheresource.com. So the reason why I'm focusing on rent and housing is because I have a very special guest on the podcast today. Her name is Lisa. Hi, Lisa.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. How are you?
Yeah, great.
Good. So today we're going to be talking about housing, as I said. And do you want to introduce yourself? Give a brief intro?
Sure. Yeah. So, you know, I'm a founder and CEO of a fintech platform specifically focused on enabling tenants to build credit and earn rewards on rent. I come from a financial background myself, very traditional, you know, investment banking, then CFA. And I'm actually an immigrant, born and raised in Belarus, came to Canada about 8 years ago. So I'm actually waiting for my citizenship right now.
Oh, yeah. Congrats. I'm excited for you. Coming soon?
Yeah, well, hopefully. Yeah. Don't know. I applied in January. So okay. Hopefully by the end of the year.
Yeah, I hope so. Yeah, I know the Canadian immigration process has been a nightmare for the past 2 years, but hopefully I've been seeing people getting it, so hopefully yours is coming shortly.
Here's to the dream, you know? Yeah.
Okay, so we're going to start off with our first coin fashion. Am I the asshole for refusing to do a credit check to rent a place? My credit isn't great, around 660, and for this reason, a lot of places aren't willing to sign me up. I also think the whole idea of needing a good credit to rent a place is absurd. But in the GTA, which is the Greater Toronto Area, right now, it's very hard to rent anything, especially since I'm looking for under $2,000 for my girlfriend and I. We're looking for to move in September 1st, and even private landlords now want credit checks, and I refuse. My girlfriend is pissed because she thinks me refusing credit checks is the reason we're getting passed up for rental offers. Even though I can prove 3 months rent, it's not good enough for these landlords, and they all now want a credit and background check. Recently, one of my friends posted she was renting out her apartment for $2,000, and it's in the area that we want to live, so I asked her. She showed it to us, and my girlfriend loved it, and it fulfilled what we needed. I told my friend I don't have great credit, and she said, that's fine, I'll make an exception, but I still need you to do a credit check. I was sick and tired of landlords doing credit checks and sent her a few paychecks, but she still said she needed a credit check, and I refused. My girlfriend was willing to do it, but my friend said she needed both of us because we would both be on the lease. I refused, and my friend said she wouldn't consider us. My girlfriend was pissed at me, and I was pissed at my friend for not making an exception for checking it. If she said she would be okay with a bad score, then why does she need to check it? She rented it a day after we saw it, so I couldn't go back and tell her that I was willing to do the credit check. My girlfriend is mad. We let go of a great apartment at an okay price, and I'm pissed she isn't willing to respect my boundaries of not letting anyone do credit checks on me for a place to live. So, am I the asshole for refusing to do a credit check to rent a place?
I think that I hate to say this, but this sounds a very one-sided conversation. Yeah, because here's the thing. The landlords take on a huge risk whenever they rent out a place. And, you know, I'm building a platform that's focused on tenants first, and I can still tell you, I can understand why people ask for this information. Mm-hmm. That, you know, potential for, you know, a bad tenant and a tenant that moves in and doesn't pay you a dime, and you have to then spend 6 months evicting, which is how long it takes to evict a tenant in GTA. Mm-hmm. Like, that's a massive risk for any landlord. Of course they wanted to risk themselves. That's the money coming out of their pocket. Yeah. If you're not paying them rent, that's the money for most of them that's covering their mortgage payment.
Yeah.
So I think it's a completely reasonable expectation that people will ask you for a credit check. With regards to your friend, I think especially given she told you she would be okay with a non-perfect score, I don't know why you wouldn't do it at this point. Especially given that, you know, what she's probably looking for is like, as I don't know how close of a friend that is, right? You know, if it's your best friend or closest friend, then I don't know what the relationship is, but the point is she probably is looking for things like $20,000 in credit card debt that at any point, if you lose your job, you're not going to be able to pay rent and you're not going to be able to get any money elsewhere, right? Mm-hmm. Like there's one thing about having an imperfect score.
Yeah.
There's a different thing between like being on the brink of financial collapse, yeah. right? So I think that's probably what she's all looking for. And I don't know why you would say no to that.
Yeah, I'm thinking that, yes, you are the asshole. Like, yeah.
I didn't want to say that in those words, but like, yeah you kind of are, especially yeah. given you found an opportunity where a person is like, literally, I just want to check it out, make sure there's nothing super fishy going on there, and that's fine with me. Mm-hmm. And you kind of let go of an opportunity. And dude, the market right now is crazy for rentals.
It's like this is your chance to get something at a good price. Yeah. And I know saying $2,000 is a good price is kind of wild, but yeah, it is a good price in this market.
It is a good price in this market. Yeah. Like, you know what I mean? Yeah, it's too bad.
Yeah, I'm of the same opinion of you. I'm like, you had such a good opportunity and you let it go because you're being stubborn. If I was your girlfriend, I would be very upset.
Like, exactly. Ridiculous. Yeah. Because like now, how are you going to find a good place, right?
Exactly. Yeah. So I also think that especially because, as you said, your friend should be doing her due diligence because she wants to make sure that her ass is covered. In Ontario specifically, tenants have the power, I would say.
Oh, 100%.
Like, tenants are in control. As you said, it takes 6 months to evict someone. That person could be living there for 6 months and not paying rent.
Not pay a single dime. Like, they could move. Like, they could give the first and last posted a check, and that would be the whole thing they pay for the 6 months. And that does happen. Often. That's why I think, like, you know, I think one of the issues with the housing system here is, like, most people are reasonable tenants and reasonable landlords, mm-hmm. right? But you hear the horror stories on each side of the kind of the camp. And that's what makes a lot of people animated, like the one group very animated with the other. Because mm-hmm. landlords hear the stories about these awful tenants who trash the place, don't pay a dime.
Yeah.
And so they're like extremely worried, overprotective, and ask for everything they can ask from those tenants. Are super diligent and kind of, you know, do ask you for a lot of personal information that a lot of the time people don't want to provide.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you hear like the other side of the story is like tenants is like, I'm a good tenant. I pay my rent every single month on time, but my landlord is super unresponsive. The place is falling apart. Mm-hmm. So like there's extremes on both sides.
Yeah.
And I think as a result of how much we like publicize that, I think there's like so much animosity between the two groups, even though most tenants and most landlords are reasonable people.
Very
right?
true. Very, very true. But yeah, you're right. We focus on the horror stories, but it's hard not to, right? It's hard not to. But the landlord tenant board here in Ontario is horrible. It takes so long to even get a response from
them.
4 to 6 months,
I heard.
Yeah. And I'm going to give my personal experience. I am a landlord, so I own a property. I rent it out to family. And if someone told me they're not going to do a credit check, I would just be like, okay, cool. Next, on to the next one, right?
Especially you know, the tenants have the power once they're in, but before the landlords have the power because the market is so hot right now.
Exactly.
Like, you go on Reddit and like, rentals Toronto whatnot
horrible.
And you hear people being like, hey, I make $100,000, I have a credit score of 750 grand, and I don't get accepted for property. I have a credit score of 750 and I don't get accepted to properties, which is like crazy.
There are options, so I feel like you just messed up on a good opportunity. Even my tenants, they didn't have the best credit score, but they were upfront about it with me. And I said, okay, it's cool. They even had a bankruptcy in the past, but it was like almost about to fall off their credit. And they were willing to sign up for like a credit bureau. So I was like, okay, I feel like these would be good tenants. So landlords can be reasonable people, but you have to give a little, something. Give a little something. Okay. Next confession. Parents want me to co-sign a mortgage to increase their mortgage loan. Okay, my 26 female, mom, 48 female, and dad, 48 male, want me to meet up with their bank in order to talk about co-signing with them. I have 4 siblings, and I'm the oldest daughter in the family. We're currently living in Manitoba with a 5-bedroom house, but one of the rooms are occupied because my auntie lives with us. My parents have been wanting to move to a bigger house since my brothers and sisters are getting older. 2 of my siblings are still sharing a room, and the youngest, 9 female, still sleeps with my parents. I have no financial background when it comes to mortgages and not sure if I should move out instead of co-signing this mortgage. I'm currently on a term with my job, which makes a decent salary of over $50,000, which is probably the reason they would want me to co-sign. I'm also not sure what my parents' financial status is, but I remember them mentioning that they've been approved for a $500,000 mortgage when we were looking at open houses. Any advice and questions are welcome. I'm not sure who the right person to ask is in this situation, hence why I'm writing this here.
That's a very interesting one. I don't know. That's a tough situation because it is your family. And, you know, most cases, or I think in the best of cases, you want to help out your family, especially given you're living there. Like, you know, you're consigning a mortgage on your own property in a way or something, mm-hmm. you're going to inherit. But something I would be worried about is, especially if you don't know your parents' financial situation, is like, is there potential that this is going to reflect on you poorly eventually if something happens? Is this also going to give them, like, get them into a habit of relying on you to kind of bail them out or help them out with the, you know, stuff like that? And I think that's very individual. I don't know if I have an answer to this.
Like, as you said, it's very individual. Personal finance is personal anyways. But, and again, this is not financial advice. We're just giving our opinions on this situation. But I feel like mixing money and friends is tricky, but mixing money and family is even trickier because you're so willing to give to people, but it can screw you over long term. And I think in our previous episode, we spoke about how lots of things can affect your credit score. This is one of those things. Co-signing a mortgage for someone is a huge decision, and it's not to be taken lightly. I think if you don't know your parents' financial situation,
yeah, probably don't do it. Like, I don't know. You have an open and honest conversation with them. You say, hey, if moving out is an option and that means they don't even need as big of a place and they don't need a cosigner, that could be a clean break, right? Like, because you might be like 26 female. Like, I'm 26. I wouldn't want to be living with my parents if I could afford to not to. So maybe if moving out is an option, you consider a possibility of moving out that frees up a bedroom. And maybe they don't need as big of a house anymore, and so they don't need a cosigner, right? But if they still need a cosigner, that indicates to me that maybe their credit is not that great.
Yeah.
And, you know, that is problematic because then you're kind of, you're tying your life together with someone, and they have potential, like, I'm not saying intentionally, but unintentionally screw up your credit.
Yeah, I agree with you. They made an edit and they said that I forgot to mention this, but my parents also told me that once I co-sign, I can leave after 5 years. Not sure if this is true. So I'm not exactly sure if it is true or not, but I do know most mortgages have terms of like 5 years.
That
so maybe
is true.
Maybe that's what they're
referring
to. Yeah,
you do refinance. Actually, that is very true. You do refinance every 5 years. So assuming it works like, you know, like any regular loan is kind of like a start of a new loan, then that probably is true. But 5 years is still a long time. And here's the thing, it doesn't matter. Like, again, it could be one missed payment.
Yeah.
And that could still impact you.
Yeah. And especially if you want to maybe buy your house in the next 5 years, the bank's going to be looking like, okay, when you apply for a mortgage, they look at the debt that you already have. So they're like, okay, you already have a mortgage. So are we going to loan you another?
Can you service that and another one?
Exactly. So I think it's a very tricky situation. Because this person's not knowledgeable about mortgages, I would be very wary to sign a mortgage. Mm-hmm. You don't know enough.
And I would explore every other option that's possible before. Like maybe, you know, your parents and you draft up a rent agreement and you stay live in a home, but they can show that to the banker that they're not going to have some extra help with that. Or maybe you move out and they don't need another bigger house. I would explore all the other options, being very open and honest with your parents about the fact that you're worried about that. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, if you do decide that it is the right decision for your family, obviously you have to live with the consequence, and you almost have to be then on your parents to make sure that, you know, they're paying their mortgage on time and stuff like that.
It's a very tricky situation.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. I'll read some of the comments. Someone said, There are several reasons not to do this. One, if your parents stop paying the mortgage, you're responsible for it too. Two, you'll lose your first time home buyer's incentive. That's a good point.
Is that true?
Yeah, I think because technically once you're on the mortgage, you are a part owner in the home. So once you become an owner, I think you will lose the incentive. And then three, as long as you're on the mortgage, you'll likely be unable to get your own mortgage because theirs will show up as active debt when a bank looks at your situation. So what your parents are asking you to do is give up a bunch of money and the option of owning your own home for at least the next 5 years. And that's only if they're able to refinance on that point on their own at that point. That's a good point, because after the 5 years, what if they're not?
What if they can't? Yeah, yeah, then you're kind of stuck with it, or they have to sell a house, and then there's a whole other affair.
Yeah, and we're heading into a recession, exactly. Right?
So mortgage rates are going to be high.
Yeah, they're already stupid high. So I would say I don't recommend co-signing. Honestly, yeah. I personally wouldn't co-sign with anyone except a partner that I'm married to. Like that's
100%.
That's it. Yeah, yeah. Okay. Okay, let's do another one. Depressed and anxious about my finances and the growing inflation. Please help. I live in the Greater Toronto Area and my wife and two-year-old. Both me and my wife have pretty stable jobs, and we're able to survive layoffs at our respective companies in the early days of the pandemic. We thought it would be best to own our house with our newborn. Then it felt like the right thing. We had a combined income of $200K with all of our savings, we were able to buy a house. Currently, the outstanding mortgage is about $850,000. We drained our savings, but still felt we made the right choice. Life was all fine, and we were making ends meet until the recent announcement about inflation and growing concerns. Reality hit hard, and I have lost my sleep since. I'm not able to think straight and feel like I made the worst decision of getting into a variable mortgage. Rent was good, worry-free. My increment is 2% this year, and my wife didn't even get any. I feel scared for the future. I feel we may leave nothing for our baby, who would have to struggle so hard after 20 years. He would never be able to buy a house. Rent would be sky high. I feel like if one of us lose our jobs, we are done right there. I feel sad. All the excitement of our house is shattered, and it's all about survival. Did I F up? Is there anything that can be done now? How can I make a solid future for my baby? How can we fight and survive this inflation?
Ooh, that's a tough one.
Very.
Tough market right now, right? Like, variable mortgages, that was a risky choice, right? Like, I think you could have locked in a pretty good fixed rate a year ago and not have to worry about that. And now maybe you did overstretch on the purchase that you made. It sounds like after paying off your mortgage, and paying off for living expenses, it doesn't leave a lot of breathing room for saving at all. Mm-hmm. And so as much as I think you want to buy property as soon as you can afford it, you also don't want to take on a mortgage that basically drains your bank account, meaning if you lose a job, how are you going to care? Like, you know,
how are you going to cover?
How are you going to cover your mortgage? Mm-hmm. How are you going to pay for it? I don't know how to answer this because it's a tough situation to be in. I do think the person that wrote it is making this bigger catastrophic event than it needs to be. Mm-hmm. Like, I think you need to get a handle on your expenses as much as you can. Mm-hmm. I think if you can find a couple of other streams of income, maybe another, I don't know what their jobs are, and obviously having a baby, but you know, like I mentioned on the previous pod, is Upwork, right? Like, can you do like some work in the evening that brings in an additional $500 a month through your family, or $1,000 a month? Like, you know, a couple of months of that could be another mortgage payment in case one of you does lose a job.
Definitely.
So I think like, you are already in a situation. Now you have to kind of work with the fact that it is the way it is. Yeah. And I think there's going to be a lot of people who go to refinance for fixed rates. So maybe look into options into that too.
Yeah. Yeah. As you said, this person, they're talking about their kid in like 18 years, 20 years. Like, I think they need to focus on right now.
Yeah.
And getting a variable mortgage rate, I have a variable mortgage rate. My payments stay the same though. So it's like the rate changes. So more maybe going to interest, but my payments stay the same. So I think if you're looking to buy a house, maybe if you're going to go for variable, make sure that you are getting it's called an adjustable variable rate mortgage, where your payments stay the same, but the amount going to interest will differ. But because mine's investment property, that's why I did it that way. It doesn't matter because it's a write-off anyways. Mm-hmm. Anyways, going back to your question, I would say that, again, as Lisa said, you need to focus on your expenses and getting them down to a point that is manageable. I would also say work on your emergency fund, because if you're so scared that you're that you are going to lose your job, then I would say your emergency fund is crucial. If you don't know what an emergency fund is, that's maybe 3 to 6 to 9 to 12 months, whatever makes you feel most comfortable, of expenses. So if your mortgage each month is $2,500, then you want to get $2,500 plus your other expenses in a bank account for 3 to 6 to however many months that makes you feel comfortable. I don't know. There's a lot going on here.
It's too bad. Like it's a bad environment to be in, right? I can see how stressful it is, especially with a young baby.
Yes.
But all you can do is really focus on what are the things that you can control, right? Yeah. There's things you can't control. You can't control inflation. You can't control whether you're going to get laid off next month or not. Mm-hmm. But you can control your expenses and like really tying your belts and making sure you're only spending on the bare minimum so you can save a little bit and build up that emergency fund you talk about. And you can also think about ways, supplementary ways to make money. You know, is like, again, part of a job, a couple of hours a week, doing something online, remotely at Upwork or other ways to, again, build up a little bit more of a buffer. So if something does happen, God forbid, you're still okay.
Yeah, I think that's crucial because it's one thing for us to say, okay, lower your expenses. But I think making money is definitely the easier option than lowering your expenses, exactly. Right? Obviously, both would be ideal, but making money is definitely
the easier. But there is so many ways now you can make money online,
Uber,
right?
They could even do Uber.
Uber, exactly. Like there's so many side hustles and stuff like that. So it's not glamorous. It's going to take away from the time of your family, but it might be the necessary step for a couple of months' time up until you get that comfortable buffer where you're not losing sleep over, you know, potentially losing your job tomorrow.
Yeah. And another thing I want to say is that the markets go up and they go down. Recessions are like part of
it's a cyclical economy.
Exactly.
A lot of people, I think, haven't been in this like boosted economy for the last 10 years.
Yeah.
You know, I'm an economist by trade.
Yeah.
Like to me, a lot of people still are just so shocked that we're heading into a recession. I'm like, what did you think? Like that was going to happen eventually, right? Like, all the money that flew into the economy during COVID, that was the recession that was going to either happen then, that now has been just prolonged and is happening now combined with higher inflation.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no surprises there, you know what I mean?
No surprise at all. So right now inflation's nuts, but it'll subside eventually. Yeah.
It'll get better.
So yeah, maybe hopefully that makes you feel a bit more comforted. Okay. One more coin fashion. Am I the asshole for refusing to pay rent to my boyfriend? My boyfriend and I have been together for a little over a year and are discussing moving in together. He owns his home but still has mortgage payments to make on it. He wants us to split all household bills 50-50. I don't have a problem with the idea of splitting the bills that way, and there would not be an issue if we were splitting the rent. My issue is if we break up, it means I have been paying towards his house. He would have the benefit of me making his mortgage payments, and I would come away with nothing. I said, okay, let's write up something saying I will get the money I paid for the mortgage if we separate. He said, that's crazy. What if we are together for 10 years? I'm not going to pay you all that money, but that's exactly my point. I offered to pay all the utilities, both his half and mine, as well as internet and his many streaming services that I don't even use. These bills are equivalent to more than half of his monthly mortgage payment, but less than I would be paying if we split everything 50-50 like he wants. He says I am being petty because I would be paying rent regardless. I don't think it's the same thing because he and I are in a partner relationship and not a landlord-tenant relationship. Also, my salary is about 2/3 of his salary, so I feel this situation I have proposed is the most equitable one. I need some perspective on the situation. So, am I the asshole for refusing to pay rent to my boyfriend?
Ooh, lots to unpack in there. Lots to unpack. Full disclosure, I live with my boyfriend who also owns his property.
Okay.
I don't pay rent, but neither he's paid off his mortgage at this point.
Okay.
And then we split everything else in the middle. Couple of things, right? Like, I think the argument that she makes about the fact that, you know, she would be paying down his mortgage, and if they break up, she walks away with nothing. Well, you know, what are you giving? You're not gaining or giving up anything. Otherwise, you would be renting and paying that to another person.
That's what I was saying.
And walk away with nothing regardless. So, you know what I mean? It's like, I think that is a little petty, the fact that she's like, oh, you know, I helped you buy your house. In the end of the day, like, nothing really changes for you.
Mm-hmm.
I do think the idea of the fact that, you know, he does make more money than her and she makes 2/3 of what he makes, you know, that's a significant difference.
Yeah.
In which there should be a conversation that's made that, you know, if you take all of the bills into one pot, maybe she should be paying slightly less, just proportionate to the income, especially given that she probably wants to be saving her own money, that essentially if they do break up and if she wanted to buy a place, mm-hmm. she could.
Yeah.
So I think there's something to be said about like the proportion of splitting bills. I don't see why you should feel a certain type of way about specifically paying rent to him.
Yeah.
And also like the argument that's made about like, you know, if we're together for 10 years, you know, we've split up and I have nothing. It's like, I'm pretty sure after 3 years, you're common law and you're basically married. So
true,
a lot of these assets are going to be split anyway.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't worry too that's much true. About the very, very, very long term.
Mm-hmm.
But the idea of, I think, you know, you should contribute. It doesn't matter whether it's in rent and utilities in what way. You should maybe contribute proportional to your income.
Mm-hmm.
So you can draft up, I guess, like a, I don't know, or like draft how much expenses are total for household, and maybe you pay 2/3 of, sorry, I guess 1/3 of that or whatever is proportional mm-hmm. To how much you make versus him.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. I don't understand her. If we spend 10 years together, then you have to pay me back everything. Like that makes no sense. But if you live at a landlord's place and then you move out, would the landlord give you the money back after 10 years? Like, I don't know. The math is not mathing for me. It makes no sense to me. So,
but I think you agree that paying proportional into the pot to how much you make, I think that makes sense, right? Because it is like, you know, she's basically, you know, potentially maybe paying a little bit more she would be renting for because she's taking on his mortgage and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
So like if she's making all of these payments for their household and not saving anything, that's problematic too, especially given that he still gets to save. So it should be proportional, but you shouldn't be tied down to like, oh, I'm going to pay utilities, but I'm not going to pay rent to you. Like it doesn't really matter in the end of the day. It doesn't matter
at all. And then she made an edit saying, I don't know if it matters, but I was previously in a relationship where I contributed a lot financially and my partner took advantage of me. When we split up, his financial situation had significantly improved and mine had deteriorated because I was always helping him. I don't want that happening again. I realize it skews my perspective in a way that might be unfair to my current partner. So I think that her past traumas are what is clouding her vision and how, because where you're giving him half the money regardless, so it doesn't matter if it's utilities or rent or mortgage. I don't think it matters. So I think her past is having a lot to do with what
how she,
But yeah, I agree with you.
I think it calls for an open and honest conversation about that.
Yes, but yeah, I think the split should change. 50-50 is not it. For,
yeah, no. If she makes like 2/3 of what he makes, like, you know, 70K versus 100K, that's a big difference,
huge.
Right? So
yeah.
You want to make sure you protect yourself. You want to make sure you're still safe. And I always say that. I think that's especially important for women, but it's probably for men in this age as well, is only rely on yourself. Make sure you have your own money. So if something does happen and someone does leave you, you're not like at their mercy. You have somewhere else to go. You have your own money to move out. So make sure you're continuously saving and you have your own emergency fund.
Yeah,
I think that's important in any partnership. But like be reasonable, you know what I mean? Like who cares if it's you're paying for utilities and groceries or you're paying for half of the mortgage. At the end of the day, it's money coming into the same pot. So.
Yeah, I feel like a lot of my audience is going to say that they would never split bills with their partner. I know that.
Really?
Yeah. Every time I post about like splitting bills with their partner, they're like, that's your roommate. That's not your partner. Like they always say that. And no comment on that actually, because I don't get it. Like in this, if you live in Canada in this day and age, I think most people are splitting bills. Even if you're saying online that you're not, I think most people are splitting
most
bills.
People are splitting, and it doesn't mean like so with myself and my partner, we don't like count to a T.
Mm-hmm.
Like oh, you know, this is a utility bill that came in, or like a grocery bill, I split it in half. But we just like proportionally pick up, you know, like I'll pay for our insurance and he'll pay for, you know, the condo fees and I'll pay for the groceries and he'll pay when we go out. And, you know, once in a while, actually, we did that exercise yesterday. Will it compare? And usually, like, nets out to be around the same.
Okay,
and unless you have a significantly different earning kind of ability. Mm-hmm. Like, I think that's what it should be like. Like, I would honestly, I don't know, maybe this is like my personal trauma, but my mom was so like, and is to this day, 17 years after the divorce, kind of financially dependent on my dad. Mm-hmm. And I would never want to be in a position where I, like, I actually feel uncomfortable taking money from anyone.
And maybe everyone listen to the last episode so you can get more context on that. Let me read a few of the comments that we have. So someone said, you're not paying their mortgage, you're paying your rent. They may cover their mortgage with that money or not, but it's not, and you're also not paying for repairs, maintenance, upkeep, property taxes. If you're splitting all bills 50-50, then she's paying half his mortgage and half his responsibilities as a landlord, which is very much skewed towards the boyfriend financially.
Yeah. No, yeah. I think it's true. If you're just paying like the rent, you're paying the rent. But yeah, if something goes wrong, for example, if this guy had a variable rate and his mortgage was all of them going up, or something happened in the condo and it was like a $5,000 repair, you should contribute into that.
Good point.
You know?
Yeah, good point, actually. What would she be able to use Chexy to like she could sign a landlord agreement with him?
Yeah, if she could. Yeah. If there's a landlord agreement in place, 100%, then because she would basically, he would still get paid via e-transfer, which is probably how she would be paying him anyway. She'd use her debit or credit card. She could build credit on it.
Yeah, I think that would be a good option for her. And everyone, if you don't know what Chexy is, that is Lisa's company. Yeah.
Maybe go listen to the previous pod or check us out at Chexy.co.
Yes. Well, okay, let me read one more response. Someone said, I agree that this is the wrong hill to die on. The one to die on is that he should calculate all of your combined living expenses and you should pay 2/3 of what he pays proportionate to your income, but not expect to get any back. One, because you're not married, you don't get equity in his property and you pay him rent, he's your landlord. Two, because you're in a relationship, you pay expenses proportional to your income rather than 50-50 like roommates. Yes, you should get some benefit from being in a relationship, but not all the advantages of marriage.
Yeah. But even then, like, you know what I mean? It's very similar to what I said, right? Like, pay proportionate of the bills to what your salary is versus his.
Yeah.
I don't know if I buy the whole marriage versus a partnership thing, because even if you did get married, I guess
it should still be proportionate. No?
Yeah. Exactly. Like, does that really change anything?
No. I don't know. Not in my opinion.
Especially in like a cohabiting relationship that's a long term, that's basically marriage.
Yeah, right? Especially if you are in Canada, the government sees you as married essentially.
Yeah, especially after, I think like in Ontario it's 3 years, in Canada overall actually it's 1 year of cohabiting.
Oh really, that's it?
Yeah, I know.
Oh wow.
Be careful who you live with.
I know, if you're listening and you're living with a partner, just know that you're pretty much married. Okay, well, thank you so much for coming on the podcast and answering these questions. Where can we find you if we want to find you or your company?
I don't have a selling running this, actually. Not a big public profile person myself. Maybe I'll try and kick this off soon. But my company, Chexy, go check us out at chexy.co, chexy.co. Our Instagram is chexy.hq. And you'll link me probably in the description. My name is Lisa. I'm not going to bother with my last name. It's too long.
Sounds good. Thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Everyone, if you want your confession read on the next episode, make sure to email us at dgbt@readytheresource.com and we can answer your question. So thank you again and have a good day, everyone. Bye.